Welcome to Sports Day Cowboys, a podcast all about the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Michael Gelkin.
And I'm Calvin Watkins. We're just two Cowboys beat writers having a weekly real talk conversation about the latest with the team, including interviews, analysis, and debate. Michael, it looks like the great Dak Prescott is back, just in time for the hapless Lions.
What happens when you give the NFL's only undefeated team the ball in your own territory three times in the same quarter? You lose. Imagine that. Cowboys now 4-2 after their fill of disappointment against the Eagles.
Cooper Rush didn't have his best game on Sunday night against the Eagles, but we have some fond memories of his five games as a starter. We'll also do a deep dive into the film room and look at one play that gave the Cowboys defense all kinds of problems.
And we're excited to have former Cowboys quarterback Ben DiNucci with us. What is it, Calvin, that you call him?
Gucci DiNucci!
That and more coming up next.
Cooper Rush was the man for, was it four or five games, whatever it was?
And five we games.
Five games officially. And we have a deep appreciation for what Cooper Rush was able to do. In fact, we all thought it was this whole thing was going to be a disaster. But instead, we have to give the man some flowers. Damon Marks is the Cowboys editor and our producer on the Sports Day Cowboys podcast. He's going to play some music for us to kind of get us in the mood for an appreciation for what Cooper Rush did.
I like this. This sounds nice.
I like it too. I think I'm going to get a cappuccino. I really am. I'm going to get a cappuccino.
So now that we've got the music, what do we do here?
Well, let's talk about what Cooper Rush did. Michael, tell us your best memory of what Cooper Rush did as the music just flows through your body.
So my favorite Cooper Rush moment from his five games, there are some options here. I think that first one against the Bengals where, you know, it kind of let everyone know that they were going to be okay after the Cowboys upset the defending AFC champion. But I'm going to go with what happened the next week. And it starts, it was against the Giants, Monday Night Football, but for me, the answer really started on a Friday practice. The Cowboys were in pads, their only padded practice of the week. And during 11-on-11, an 11-on-11 period is closed to media, but this is the way it was described to me. First play of 11-on-11 for the Cowboys going into their first division game of the year. Cooper Rush throws an interception, Trayvon Diggs. Boom, first play. Second play, he messes up the protection, making a bit of a bust of that, a bit of a mess. And then the third play, he overthrows Peyton Hendershot on an out route and incompletion. Really poor start for the Cowboys offense going into that big game. But then Cooper Rush just embodied what I think was the trait that we saw throughout his time as starter, which is just his calmness. He didn't panic. He didn't scream an expletive or clap his hand, anything like that. He just calmly led the huddle and then ended up having a pretty nice practice. And then Cowboys went ahead and just kind of used that as a foundation for a win in New Jersey against the Giants. And you look back at that win and how critical it was. Giants are 5-1 right now. If Cowboys had lost that game, not only are the Eagles undefeated in the NFC East, but so are the New York Giants, and the Cowboys are 3-3 with Dak Prescott looking to come back. And it just, the whole tone around that return feels different, but it doesn't because of Cooper Rush in large part.
I'm just letting the music play and just hit me to my soul because on October 9th, 2022, Cowboys were in Los Angeles, the place where Jerry Jones was born. He turned 80 years old a couple of days after that game. This was the last win for Cooper Rush. And to me, that big moment for Rush was in the fourth quarter of that game. Cowboys were up 19-10, and they're driving. They need a field goal or a touchdown. They were faced with 3rd-and-11. They were in Rams territory. So a couple of things are at play here. You know, they could run the ball with Zeke Elliott, Tony Pollard, get closer for a field goal, or they could throw the ball. Rams called a timeout. There was some discussions. And my man Cooper Rush, he throws a slant to CeeDee Lamb, who gets 11 yards. It's 4th-and-1. Cowboys kick a field goal with Brett Maher. They ended up being the extra cushion that they needed. They win the ball game 22-10. And in that moment, for me, it wasn't about making a big play down the field for Cooper Rush. It was doing what he does, Just make the simple play. It was a three-step drop. Let's get out of here and get the field goal. Cooper Rush is not trying to throw the ball 50 times. I think he completed 10 passes in that Rams game, you know. And the 10th completion of that day set up a big field goal that they would need, obviously. They didn't, you know, the Rams didn't come back, obviously. But it was plays like that to me that makes me a little soft-hearted about Cooper Rush and what he was able to do. So I was very appreciative of Cooper. I thought he played very inconsistently against the Eagles, and that was an example for all the people that wanted to take over for Dak. That Eagles game was an example why he can't. However, based on this exercise, we're appreciating the great Cooper Rush.
I think I'm ready to talk Cowboys defense. Are you up for talking a little Cowboys defense?
Yes, sir, I am.
So this is the copycat league, and two of the biggest plays that the Cowboys allowed to the Eagles on Sunday night came on the same play. And you probably don't have to wait until Christmas Eve when the Cowboys and Eagles play again to see the Cowboys be confronted with this play concept, because it's, again, copycat element of this league. You've got to defend it until you can show on film that you can stop it. And so it happened in the first half, both plays, 4th and 3. A.J. Brown, Eagles wide receiver, starts on the left side of the formation. He's kind of split in the backfield almost. I mean, at the snap, he sprints to the right for what the Eagles call a simple flat route. And then the wide receiver on the right side of the formation, Devontae Smith, he runs a pick play. And so it's this mesh concept where he picks, first it's Trayvon Diggs. So it's a man coverage beater. And so Diggs can't get to where A.J. Brown is going on the other side of the formation. And that leaves Micah Parsons kind of in the middle of nowhere. So they convert a 4th and 3 off of this, and then that drive ends in a touchdown. Then after a Cooper Rush interception, Eagles are back on the field. That drive ends with another touchdown, and A.J. Brown in that same play scores to make it a 14-0 game. And that was kind of like that moment off of one play. I think it really just changed the game's complexion.
I don't know if it changed the complexion, but to me, since they ran that play twice for, you know, successfully, it was more about what the Cowboys defense was not on Sunday night, and they couldn't make plays, and they left. And it was interesting. When you look at those plays again, they were forcing Micah Parsons to make a decision. They were saying, all right, Micah, you can go get Jalen Hurts, 'cause he's single up with him, knowing that Jalen Hurts can throw a sidearm pass to A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown is a big guy. You know, he reminds me of Deebo Samuel. That was the first time I saw A.J. Brown in person. I didn't realize how big he was, you know, because he had played in Tennessee and the Cowboys hadn't played Tennessee. And I hadn't watched much of Tennessee, but he's a big receiver and it's hard to cover him. That's why you need digs on him. And matter of fact, it wouldn't surprise me in the rematch, they would think about putting Jaron Curse on him in some situations. But it was a pick play, but defensively, you got to communicate and say, it's almost like basketball. When someone's setting a pick on you, and you got to say, pick, pick, pick. And whatever your philosophies are, either you go through the pick or you switch. So in those situations, Cowboys secondary needed to communicate, and it wasn't a lot of communication there. Yeah, you could say it was a pick play, and I would agree with you 1,000%. But the interesting thing to me is that play was about really Micah Parsons forcing him to make a decision, and he really couldn't make a decision. He was in no man's land. It was not his fault. It was just what it is. And that is why that play worked, because they were like, we're going to put Micah Parsons, we're going to neutralize him. We're going to force him not to do anything. You know what I'm saying? And he couldn't do anything because he's stuck.
Yeah, well, it's not Micah's play to make.
Example. Isolate him, he can't make a play on anything. That's the point. He can't do anything on that.
It should never come down to Micah having to make a play. The first time they ran it, it's Trayvon Diggs who gets caught up into the pick at midfield.
Right, from in Devontae the trash. Smith. Right, in all the trash.
And then the second one, Jordan Lewis was so late to react. When Devontae Smith was looking to make that pick, there was no one to pick. So he just ran a route upfield, and then it was an easy, easy touchdown pass for Jalen Hurts. And so to me, it's Micah kind of looks – ends up looking bad if you don't know what you're seeing. You saw kind of like he's just kind of standing there like, well, I'm
right. What is he supposed to do?
And here's A.J. Brown running 19 miles per hour. Like, well, you know, and so he looks like he's kind of middle of nowhere. But for the record, Micah Parsons has never given up a coverage touchdown in his career, and that score to A.J. Brown wasn't the first. Like that was not on Micah Parsons. It was not his play to make, but the Cowboys, you know, they had a lot of conversation both on Sunday in-game, making the adjustment after the play was run twice, and then on Monday, of course, just kind of doing a bit of an autopsy of the game. But what they do in those sorts of situations, and the obvious one is, hey, play zone coverage. And if they're in zone coverage there, then that 4th-and-3 and that touchdown, I mean, I do think it changed the complexion of the game, both these plays. We aren't having this conversation if the Cowboys were in zone, because it's specifically designed to beat man coverage.
Yeah, no, we're not saying that, oh, Micah Parsons got beat here. I'm just pointing out that they ran two plays towards the baddest man on the planet, right? Micah Parsons' side, and they got success because they neutralized him. They put him in no man's land. That's all we're saying. It's not his fault. You could say, Micah, maybe you jump up and try to block the pass. He can jump up. You know, he's got legs. But they put him in on an island, and that messed him up. And I guarantee you, in the rematch, I don't think the Eagles run that play again. Because I remember going into this game, the Cowboys thought, and they expressed this after the game, they were like, man, the Eagles didn't throw a lot of screens because we've seen that. Well, the game plan changes from week to week. You know what I'm saying? So I would be surprised if the Eagles try this play again. Now, even though it did work twice, but Dan Quinn and his coaches are pretty smart that I think they would solve it.
We shall see. Now, we'll speak with someone who knows something about starting against the Eagles. I'm excited to hear his perspective, not only about the game, but some of what else he's got going on. Ben DiNucci joins the show next.
Ben DiNucci joins us now on Sports Day Cowboys. DiNucci was a Cowboys 2020 seventh-round pick from James Madison. Now, I want to tell you guys that DiNucci was a transfer from the University of Pittsburgh, and the great DiNucci has played in three NFL games, earning his only start so far on November 1st, 2020, on the road against the Eagles. And while DiNucci isn't with the team at this stage, he's got a lot going on. He's got a clothing line company called True Brand, which has taken not only the Cowboys locker room by storm, but the community as well. So DiNucci will explain what's going on with him and everything else. Hey, Ben, what's going on?
I appreciate that great introduction. oh, it's good. I woke up this morning. It was like 45 degrees and threw a sweatshirt and sweatpants on for the first time in what seemed like, you know, a while. So it was a nice little wake up call this morning, but trying to keep myself busy these past few weeks without, you know, football in the regular schedule. So definitely an adjustment period on my end.
Where are you based? Are you still in Dallas? I know it's been chilly here. Are you back on the East?
Yeah, I'm still in Dallas, still in the area. I've got a lease that runs 4 or 5 more months. So I'll be here for the time being, still working out, staying in shape, because this NFL thing is crazy, and I'm just kind of starting to figure that thing out. You get a call at any time of the day, and you could be on the other side of the country in 3 hours. So just trying to stay ready and do all I can to make sure that if I get another opportunity, I'm ready to go.
How do you stay ready? Like, do you go to the local high schools, or can you still go to the Star? How do you stay ready in a sense?
I'm not sure what would happen if I walked back into the Star right now. I'd probably get some looks. People would probably think I was dropping off some hats or something like that. definitely would not be showing up to practice, but I've got a quarterback coach who's actually in the area. He's in Frisco. So nothing's really changed on my end. It's kind of the full sports performance center. They've got a workout room, 50-yard field out back. So I'm kind of able to knock out my workout, my throwing, and all that stuff in the same building. So been pretty fortunate not having to necessarily go somewhere that having to just pick up and change locations. Been pretty fortunate to stay in the Dallas area.
I don't know if this constitutes cross-training or if it's just a good time, probably just the latter, but I'm fascinated to know about pickleball. I heard you've taken that up. It's all the rage. I really want to learn, as someone who likes tennis, and Maria Pacheco and I in high school had a phenomenal badminton team. It looks like kind of like a blend of the two. What's your experience been with that rising sport?
Yeah, I tell people all the time, it's kind of a mix between ping pong and tennis. I grew up with a ping pong table in my basement, and my mother was a huge tennis player. So me and my brother had some pretty intense duels on the ping pong table. And then I think just like everybody else, when COVID started in 2020, people were trying to find stuff to do. And I mean, naturally you just kind of gravitated towards stuff that was outside, and pickleball was a name that kept getting thrown around. And so, My family started playing. Me and my buddies who are all back home started playing. And I think over the past, like, really it's been the past 6 months, I think you see some of the athletes endorsing it. And I just saw Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth playing Dirk and somebody else last week. So, I mean, I'm always up for a challenge. If those guys are doing that in the air, I'd love to know how to get involved in that. I think I've got the perfect tennis pickleball body. So, if anyone out there is listening to this, hit my line and, I'd love to join a game or love how to learn how to get involved somehow.
I think I'm an old man. I don't know. How do you play pickleball? Is it just like tennis, but on a smaller court, table, whatever?
Basically, you play with a wiffle ball instead of a tennis ball, so the ball doesn't go nearly as far. The court is, you know, if I had to guess, probably half the size of a tennis court. You can play 1v1 or you can play 2v2, and the rules kind of change however you want to do it. I like playing 1v1. It's a little more of a workout, better when you don't got someone, you know, on the other side. You kind of limits you to half the court, like being able to kind of be athletic and, you know, run around a little bit and use it to stay in shape and whatnot.
Nice. That's crazy.
Oh, I need to play. So I need to take it up sometime. If you need a 1v1 challenge, let me know. I'll drive up the whole way.
Hey, I remember you were about to start in Philly during the pandemic, and a fan on Twitter said Gucci DiNucci, right? And because the fans were excited, you know, because you never know what's going to happen in a game. And I just stole that from a fan, and I always called you Gucci DiNucci lovingly because I liked the nickname. And that week before the Philly game, we ran into Michael Gallup, and we asked him, how's Ben throwing the ball? And Gallup was like, he's slinging it. You know, he's slinging that thing. We're going to be all right. And so it was this confidence growing with the team and in the media that – you were going to sling that thing, and that you guys had a chance. Like, take me back to that game. I know it was 100 years ago, but, you know, your first start on the road, so much was going on, and I don't know if you needed 1,000 tickets for that game because, you know, you're from Pittsburgh and the game was in Philly.
Well, I guess I'll kind of start there. So my parents have never missed a game, college, high school, anything, and it just so happened that week my dad got COVID a few days before the game. So,
oh man,
being Philly to Pittsburgh, it's only about a 3.5 hour drive. So they're pretty bummed. I had my brother, my sister, high school friends, college friends, girlfriend. I mean, just about everybody you can imagine. My parents were the only ones that weren't there. But I'm sure my dad enjoyed, you know, watching from his couch better anyway. But honestly, that game that year kind of feels fake in a way to me, and I think a lot of the other guys on the team mm-hmm. too. Is just kind of this weird year that no one has ever seen in the NFL before, kind of a whole new set of expectations, roles, guidelines that you know, guys were kind of just coming into the building every day and just kind of learning on the fly and being like, all right, this is what we got to do today. But I will say this, the thing that people don't really understand about the NFL is it's not like college where every quarterback's going to get a rep during practice and you got the ones, the twos, and the threes rolling. The NFL is strictly, you know, the 11 guys that are going to play on offense are the guys that are taking every rep during the practice during the week. And, you know, the backups are the ones that are running the scout team. And, you know, 2 weeks before that game, Dak was healthy, Andy Dalton was healthy, and I was, you know, sitting in the back of practice with my arms crossed, just kind of taking as many mental reps as possible. And then in the span of 10 days, Dak goes down for the year and Andy Dalton goes down with a concussion. And it's not like they could bring a veteran in or somebody who's played before to kind of, you know, fill that gap for a week. So everyone's starting to kind of look at me with a smile on their face and they're like, all right, man, like, let's go. Like, here we go. You got nothing to be afraid of, nothing to lose. So kind of just go out there, do what you do and try to just, you know, put some points on the board and see if we can steal a game. But the toughest part for me was, you know, you don't have a camp, you don't have any type of summer. And for rookies, really, that's I think the biggest thing from year two and three that I didn't have my rookie year OTAs. You get a training camp, you get a summer, you get reps, a preseason. Before that game, I started in Philly. I had not thrown a ball to Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, or CeeDee Lamb one time before 3 days wow. before the game that Wednesday. So, I mean, people can say whatever they want about, you know, you stink, all this stuff. I mean, it's natural for me to see that too. That's social media and that's the world that we live in. But I mean, I just kind of laugh that off. It's like people would have had to see kind of, you know, my routine that week and what I had to go through and then kind of what was expected of me on national television, having your first time playing in the NFL be on Sunday Night Football. I, I mean, shoot, if I never get to play again, that's something I can say for the rest of my life. I got to start a game for the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. And I guess, isn't that kind of the dream growing up? You know, you want to want to say you're able to play in an NFL football game. And I think to start for the Dallas Cowboys, that's kind of a dream come true. But I think if you would throw me into that situation now, I think 2 years later, I think it would be a completely different situation. I think you could kind of see the progression from year one to year three, just in the preseason. This year, I felt head and shoulders just so much better, so much confident just in myself and my reads mentally. The game started to slow down. The NFL game is very different than college. And if a play is not there, you got to live to see another play, throw the ball away. If you have the ball at the end of every play, whether it's a kick, incomplete pass, you know, run, I think you're going to be in a good spot. So just kind of learning those little nuances of the game and how college is different than the NFL. I think when I get my next opportunity, I'll be better suited for it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's worth emphasizing. And if you hadn't said it, I was going to. It's just so unusual to, when you're drafted, typically you have a rookie minicamp in the spring. You didn't have that. Typically you have a whole spring workout program, includes OTAs, minicamp, on-field workouts. You didn't have any of those. Training camp was far shorter than usual, and there was no preseason. Here you go, Ben. Here are the keys. Start on primetime in Philadelphia against the Eagles. That was unreal how that all came leading up to it. And so, yeah, do you even view yourself as having had put out regular season film, or like, if you want to know where I am in my development, like turn on the preseason tape? And honestly, preseason, because you're not throwing against ones. I think we saw it with Cooper Rush. Like, you know, it's one thing to be on the field behind a preseason offensive line throwing to preseason style 90-man roster receivers, as opposed to when you're actually getting the chance in the regular season throwing to the ones.
Yeah, I think that's all part of it. I mean, life in the NFL as a backup is a two is a three is completely different than being a starter. That's just kind of how preseason works. You know, guys that are bound to be the backup, the third string, I mean, they're gonna put you in with the rookies. They're gonna put you in with a bad offensive line, see what you can do, make sure you can still manage and still perform and show that you can lead the offense and all that type of stuff. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the thing for me is I didn't play great in that game in Philly, and I didn't play great when I had my first preseason in 2021 the following year. So I think it's kind of hard to judge me based off of, you know, 2.5 quarters that I played this preseason, even though the sample size was not as big. I played a lot better, and so unfortunately, I think that, you know, teams are still kind of looking at the last 2 years as, you know, how do we kind of gauge this kid? And you know, that's all part of it. I get it. It's the NFL. That's how this thing works. But, you know, the thing for me is I can't control that. So I'm just trying to do what I can do every day to make sure that, you know, if I get a call, I get another opportunity, you know, I'm better suited for it. So.
Did you watch Sunday's Eagles game, Cowboys-Eagles game?
Yeah,
what were your impressions?
I mean, that's tough. I mean, you go play anywhere on the road, let alone Sunday Night Football division game. The Eagles are undefeated. There's so much hype around it. You know, Cooper, you know, played well. I thought made some bad throws, but equally made some good throws. And I think, you know, the previous 4 weeks you had seen that, you know, the defenses and kind of the atmospheres that the Cowboys were playing in weren't nearly, you know, what they were on Sunday night. I think, you know, penalties and, you know, turnovers had kind of been the MO in 2020 and 2021. I think some of that stuff kind of started to resurface itself the other night. But, you know, the Eagles are a good team. Cowboys are a good team. It's actually interesting. You get a whole kind of completely different viewpoint on the game watching from TV. I was surprised, you know, Coach McCarthy didn't challenge that one that CD looked like he had, you know, stretched it out, you know, across the first down, and then the subsequent play, you kind of run a hurry up naked on fourth and one. I was a little shocked there. Just a few things, you know, necessarily when you're on the field watching the game, you don't necessarily pick up all that stuff. I think watching the game as a fan, kind of as a spectator from the couch, has got me a little different viewpoint. It's just kind of interesting to see how people talk about the game, watch the game, and you know, it's been a different experience watching on Sundays for sure, instead of being on the sideline.
And you have the inside knowledge, like you just said about, yeah, he didn't challenge the CeeDee Lamb play, but you were surprised on the play call. And, you know, because you kind of have intimate knowledge on what they might call in that situation. And you kind of know, you know, what Cooper goes through and what CeeDee goes through. The interesting thing about that play, I thought CeeDee just didn't get off the jam. Like, it's like he was trying to get free, and I thought that was the guy he wanted to throw the ball to. And then he's on the move, and he's throwing it down the field to the tight end. So there's so much can go on a play like that.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing that people don't realize either is as a quarterback, you probably got like maybe 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds max to mm-hmm. read a defense, get a snap, determine where you're going with the ball. There's just a lot that goes on. So in the heat of the moment, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. Obviously, looking back at it, 4th-and-1, you probably run the ball, but hindsight 2020, the Eagles were probably expecting a run too. So is a naked really, really a bad call? I'm not sure that it is. It's probably a fine call, just execution, and you know, guys weren't open, and sometimes that's part of it. Their guys get paid to make plays too. So,
what did you think of Cooper? I mean, because no one would have thought that when Dak went down that the Cowboys would at least be 4-2 right now. What did you think of Cooper the last couple of weeks?
I thought he did really well. I think when you look at Cooper as a quarterback, he is not a guy that's going to wow you with kind of those physical traits. So his game is take care of the ball, get the ball to guys in space and kind of let them make plays, manage the game, get the run checks what they need to be. And he's not a guy that's going to force the ball down the field and kind of try to make these Mahomes-ish Aaron Rodgers type of throws. He's going to just take what the defense gives. And I think you saw that the past 4 weeks. The offense has been efficient. The run game has been really well, keeping the offense in third manageable. I think has helped Kellen and Cooper a lot in terms of play call and just making sure that everyone's comfortable in what's being called. And I think after the first week, if you would have told Cowboys fans that Dak was going to be hurt, miss 5 games, and they were going to be 4-2, they would have said you're crazy. So I think Cooper's done a heck of a job as a backup quarterback. Your job is to put the team in best possible position to win. And Cooper went 4-1 and in 5 weeks did all he was asked. And I get people are going to look at his most recent game and it wasn't as good as the the previous few. But the bottom line is he went 4-1 as a starter, and the Cowboys are sitting in a position to have a good shot at the division when Dak comes back.
No doubt. Is that your dog back there, Ben?
That is my dog. He's in all the other room. I'm surprised you guys can hear him.
usually it's my dog that's causing disturbances, so I empathize. People aren't able to, who are listening, to see what you're wearing right now, but you're wearing the I see the hat and I know exactly the brand. It's the upside down Arch Dallas city name on the cap. Can you explain your involvement and the backstory behind a brand that, as Calvin said earlier, is everywhere? You see Cowboys players wearing it. You go to the grocery store, you see people around town wearing it. What's the story there?
Yeah, so I'm a co-owner. My business partner, his name is Sang Truong. He started it in 2020, right kind of when COVID had kicked off in the middle of things. March, April 2020. And his thing was, one, he wanted to kind of disrupt the way that people thought. It says upside down Dallas, it's upside down. It seems like every time I wear it out, someone says something to me like, hey, that's a cool hat. What's up with that? Like, do you like Dallas? Do you not like Dallas? and that's fine. If people kind of view it as the horns down thing, whatever, and they're buying it because they don't like Dallas, same thing. As long as you're buying one, it doesn't really matter to us. And then his other thing was, he just flipped Dallas upside down because the world felt, upside down. Part of what we were living through, the times we were in. And so flipped it upside down, looked really cool. He started off probably with like 20 hats, sold them. They sold out right away. So he's like, interesting, this could be something. Just kind of increased the quantity every time. And then I guess fast forward to after my rookie year, this was in May of 2021, he had just reached out and said, hey man, I'm looking for a business partner, need a way to kind of expedite this thing. We both got really lucky in the fact that he was able to get in with a Dallas Cowboys player, and just kind of naturally, all the guys on the team kind of gravitated towards it, wore it, supported. Dak's been our biggest supporter. He's got probably more than I have at this point. He's easily got 50 or 75 hats, one of every color. And so, every time we get stuff in, he wants new stuff, wears it all around. And I think kind of the organic growth of this thing has been really cool to see. I think, for the past 5 or 10 years, I've always been known as like Ben the football player. And when I go out downtown and people are like, hey man, you're the guy with the hats, right? Blah, blah, blah. that's been really cool for me to kind of see a different side of, what people recognize me for. And it's kind of refreshing, honestly, when people don't come up to you and you're like, hey man, like all I want to talk about is football, right? Now people want to talk about the hats and the brand. And it's just been cool getting to have my brain kind of work in a different way than football has made me work in the past 5 or 10 years, and kind of getting to be creative and just seeing how the city and the community and everyone has kind of rallied around this thing. It's been really, really awesome.
I do like the website where it's Dak is sitting between you guys. That is just That's perfect.
Yeah.
If you need it, that's a marketer's dream. I got QB1, you know, endorsing my hat, basically. Yeah. You know, I think that's great. You know, when I went to the website and I was like, whoa, that's Dak. Gucci DiNucci. Woo, I love it.
I think the thing we started to realize is that if Dak or Luka Doncic puts anything on their head or on their body, it's like, what is it and how do I get it? So as soon as you see the Cowboys throw up, you know, the pictures of them, you know, on the flights, you know, going to away games, and you see five or six guys, I mean, instantly it seems like, you know, our Shopify gets lit up with people visiting the store, people buying hats. So kind of the organic marketing, the organic you know, kind of push around this whole thing has been the coolest part. We haven't had to spend much money on advertisements or marketing at all, just because I think they're so visible around the city and on social media, and just word of mouth has really, really helped this thing.
That's awesome. How would you, and I don't know if you want to get into the specifics, I think I asked you a similar question at training camp, but how would you quantify the growth of True Brand?
I wish I could tell you actual numbers. I'm not going to do that, but I would say from 2020 to 2021, it was a 10x growth. And from 2021 to where we're at right now, it is far more than a 10x growth. So this thing has been, it's been cool. I mean, it's still kind of breathtaking when I go out and I was at the Stars home opener on Saturday night. And I kid you not, I probably saw 100 of them in the stadium or in the arena. And it's pretty cool. I go up and try to, you know, everyone that's got one on, I try to say what's up, just kind of introduce myself, ask them how they like it. And it's, we've got some pretty cool stuff in the works of collabs that are going to be coming out in the next 2 weeks. So stay tuned. Not allowed to say anything right now, but, it may or may not have something to do with some of the major sports teams, in the area. So, that's pretty exciting. Those will be our first major collab, stuff of that nature that we've done. So we think that'll only help us escalate as a brand too. So,
Ben, tell people how they can get the hat online if that's the easiest way.
Yeah. The website is truebrand.com, TrueBrand.com. If you got social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, I mean, whatever is easier to keep up. We've got colors. I mean, if you just want to interact, engage, see what we're up to, whatever's easier for you guys is whatever's easier for us. So truebrand.com and truebrand on social media, they're all the same tag.
Awesome. Well, Ben, it's fun to go down memory lane a little bit with you, but also to hear what you got going on now and what's ahead. So we wish you the very best, and we'll keep in touch, no doubt, but excited to see what's in store for you.
I appreciate it, guys. If you ever need anything, ever need some hats, let me know. I know a guy can get you them at discount. So if you ever need them, let me know. Yeah, of course.
An employee discount. That's what we need. Employee discount.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Appreciate it, man. Of course. Appreciate it, guys.
It was great hearing from Ben. Well, Calvin, there are four teams in the NFC with a winning record. The Cowboys are one of them. Eagles, Giants, and Vikings are the others.
Wow. Hey, three of those teams play in the NFC East, right?
Yes, they do, Calvin. Now, who is the best team in the NFC East? That is an interesting question. Our answers, as you might expect, are different. I Disagree is next.
Hey, listeners. This is Damon Marks. I'm the Cowboys editor for the Dallas Morning News. That includes the Sports Day Cowboys podcast that you're listening to right now. What I love about this beat is the nonstop news cycle that is the Dallas Cowboys. But beyond that daily adrenaline rush, being able to reveal the human side of the players you watch on TV is a privilege. Calvin and Michael talk to these players each week to bring you the behind-the-scenes stories that you can't get anywhere else. If you want to support this good work, it's easy. Just subscribe to the Dallas Morning News and become a member. You'll find a special offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen.
Welcome back to Sports Day Cowboys. Calvin, I was at the game. You were at the game. Everyone who's listening to this podcast, I'm sure, saw the game. The Cowboys lost to the Eagles. But after having seen that game and the way the Cowboys went about it without their number one quarterback, Dak Prescott, I am convinced the Cowboys are the best team in the NFC East.
I disagree. And before I tell you more about why I disagree with this, I seriously want you to go to your mental health provider and talk to him seriously, because something's wrong with you today, right, Michael? I don't know what's going on with you, but how can you say the Eagles are not the best team in the NFC? Wins and losses matter in the National Football League. Wins and losses matter in professional sports in general. In fact, wins and losses matter in the college athletic field. So the Eagles are undefeated, undisputed. Now, I'm not saying the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl, but they are clearly the best team in the NFC. They don't have the best defense, I'll give you that. But offensively, Jalen Hurts is playing at an elite level right now. DeMarcus Lawrence is telling me after that loss to the Eagles that Jalen Hurts, he's not Tom Brady-ish. Well, Jalen Hurts, he beat the Cowboys behind at home. The Eagles are the best team in the conference. They can win ugly like they did against Arizona the previous week. They can win pretty like they have been early in the season. And hey, guess what? They knocked off America's team on Sunday night. It was a statement game for the Cowboys, and they failed to make a statement. The Eagles did.
If it was all about wins and losses and it was all about the record, well, my San Diego Padres wouldn't still be alive in the NLCS after having just beaten the Dodgers. Your Yankees wouldn't have been in a battle for their lives Tuesday against the Cleveland Guardians. But as we know with sports, it's not just about the record. You talk about Jalen Hurts as being this, you know, elite guy. And you know what? I have been impressed with Jalen Hurts, and I was looking to see on Sunday night exactly how he did against what was the most vaunted defense that he'll have faced to date this season. And I look at the second half, Jalen Hurts was 4 of 8 passing, 44 yards, took 2 sacks, 44 yards in the second half. The Eagles made a point to run the football, 20 carries, only 63 yards, average of 3.2 yards per carry. I thought the Cowboys defense played overall very strong on Sunday when you consider the road setting. Now, they needed to clean up the penalties. They had 6 of them. That was the most the Cowboys defense has had in a game since Thanksgiving against the Raiders. And we all remember that game with Anthony Brown drawing 4 pass interference penalties. That was a bit of an aberration. I see how the Cowboys did overall. They only allowed 2 drives against Jalen Hurts the entire game that went 45 or yards or longer. So to me, I think the Cowboys defense overall passed the test. And now you project forward with Dak Prescott coming back. I don't think we're talking about a game where the Cowboys had 3 interceptions. I don't think we're talking about a game where they had a 4th down that they attempted deep in their own territory and turned the ball over in the second quarter, ended up being down 20-0 because of it, in part between those turnovers and the 4 and out there. So to me, when you consider all those things, yeah, I'm not convinced, despite the score, despite the records. I'm throwing all that out because of what my eyes tell me. And my eyes tell me, after the Cowboys have already beaten the New York Giants, that they can beat the Philadelphia Eagles too, and they are the best team in the division.
I got stats too, Michael. Listen to me. The Eagles were 6-14 on 3rd down. Okay, I got eyes too.
That's not good.
They're pretty good.
6-18? What was the number?
6-14, 42.9%.
42, that's good math. Okay, I'm sorry. That's still not good. Good math, but bad, pretty below average. Keep going. This is getting good.
Eagles were 3-4 in the red zone. That's pretty good. So that's 75%. 3-4 divide in division. You know, you get that?
Can do that math. Yep.
Okay, that's good. And check this out. Yes. Cowboys defense is still down the Eagles in the second half. Finally, but when the game was on the line, Eagles got the score they needed. That was the bottom line. And yes, we all love the Cowboys defense. Micah Parsons, you had an okay game. DeMarcus Lawrence, you talked a lot of smack. You missed Jalen Hurts down in the backfield. Trayvon Diggs, can you get a pick? Hey, your star players got to come up big in these situations. The Cowboys defensive stars did not. Nothing against the Cowboys defense, because they're a very good unit. But all I heard was, we'll get him next year, meaning Christmas Eve. Eagles are undefeated, undisputed, and are in first place. They got a bye week. They're the best team in the conference.
I think that there is very well a scenario where the Cowboys cannot catch up to the Eagles. You look at the schedule, not only of who the Eagles have played so far, but who they're about to play here after they come off of their bye this week. I mean, 2 games, it's going to be a lot to catch up to the Eagles, because they might not lose a whole lot here down the stretch.
The Cowboys got a good schedule too, wouldn't you agree?
I'm talking about the Cowboys being two games back of the Eagles, and it might be hard to make up that gap over the course of the rest of the year. But I do think that the Cowboys can, whenever it is that they play the Eagles, and we'll see. I mean, these teams, these rosters, they can change so much week to week. So I'm not going to say definitively the Cowboys are going to beat the Eagles on Christmas Eve, because who knows, maybe they're without Dak Prescott, maybe they're without Cooper Rush, and you know, whatever it is, you just don't know how things can change. But I'm just saying today, as things stand right now, I was very unconvinced that the Eagles are the best team in the division, in the conference. I think that right now, with Dak Prescott coming back, can be the Cowboys. I do believe that they're number one team in the division, despite the records, and we will see how it all plays out. But yeah, I was unimpressed with the Eagles team that I saw against lesser competition, unimpressed with the Eagles team that I heard so much about their improvement offensively. They did have Lane Johnson exit in the second quarter with a concussion. So maybe, hey, maybe that's throwing off my analysis. Maybe the Eagles are better than how they looked offensively, but I don't know. I need to see a whole lot more, and I know what the Cowboys defense is, and they're probably the strongest group between offense, defense, and special teams throughout the entire division.
Well, you go back to that health plan, I think I won this argument, because there's nobody in America that doesn't believe that the Eagles are the best team in the NFC. Nobody. Now, we're not saying the National Football League, but that the bottom line is the Philadelphia Eagles, fly Eagles fly, baby. They are the best team. Number one, undefeated, undisputed. The record says it all.
Wow. Okay. Well, fortunately, that's all the time we have at Sports Day Cowboys. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
This show is produced by Damon Marks, and you can stay up to date on every episode by following Sports Day Cowboys wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find the show, that's right, you can find it, and more audio from our newsroom by following the Dallas Morning News in those same players.
Find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen. You'll also find a special membership offer there just for listeners. We also want to hear from you, so email your questions, your comments, and I mean this, your voice memos, record yourself and send it to dmncowboys@dallasnews.com. You can also ping us directly on Twitter at @DMN_Cowboys and on Facebook at Cowboys Fan Central. For the news, I'm Michael Gelkin.
And I'm Calvin Watkins. We'll see you next week.